Ask for your prayers this morning. Need the Lord's help as I endeavor to be faithful to do my little part. The Lord would speak to our hearts here this morning. Lovers of their own selves. Burden the Lord's been talking to me about. I'd like to begin in 2 Timothy, the 3rd chapter. The first verse says, "This know also, that in the last days perilous times shall come. For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof. From such turn away." Don't live this kind of life. Turn away from it. Turn away from the pattern that you see lived and set before you in the last days, in the latter days of this earth. Of course, no man knows the day or the hour, but here are some things that are going to mark the last days. It begins with something that has to do with where our affections and where our love is. That men, rather than being lovers of God, rather than being lovers of that which is good and wholesome and right, rather than being lovers of mankind or my neighbor, lovers of their own selves. We live in... What I'm going to say is not just unique to our generation, but I believe that our generation can be characterized in large part as a me-first generation. You'll hear sometimes people say, "I need some me time." And I want us to understand the balance of the things that I'd like to bring out this morning. That there is a place that we are to tend to our own selves. That if the Lord has made me a keeper of the vineyard, I must first keep my own vineyard. If I don't keep my own soul, I don't have anything from which to be able to help somebody else. So I can focus on trying to help somebody else, and I'm going to make a difference. But I better focus on making sure I myself am where I need to be with the Lord first. There are times that I have to take care of my health. That I have to take some time to make sure I'm not neglecting the needs of my own life and body. With that understanding or that caveat, or what I trust to be balanced, I'd like for us to understand a little bit of what the world's philosophy in this time is. It's a selfie generation. Perhaps we've all done it. I'm not preaching against it. You can click the button and the camera turns around away from other people and onto me. But really more than what's happening in the phone or the camera. People are living their lives that way. Turning the focus away from others or what's going on onto seeing myself. In this selfie generation and the focus on that, it seems like it's less about what is happening around you and more about how I look and what is happening around me. People today are focused or concerned about creating their brand, their image, how people perceive them, how they portray themselves and their lives. Social media, as you'll hear me occasionally take pot shots at, feeds that. That I can own almost like somebody would manage their business and the brand of their business and customer perception and things like that's important for a company. And people oftentimes live their lives like that, that so much of their focus is on the perception of what people see of my life and of my family and the things that I do and the way that I look. I never ceases to strike me as a little bit amusing whenever I see somebody, might be at a national park, it might be at a tourist attraction or something, and I see them with their phone held up, and I see them pose a certain way, and then look at it, and then nope, with a little different angle, do my hair a little bit different way, over and over as all the people are looking on, oblivious to what everybody around me said. But I want to get just the right and the perfect portrayal of what I want to see myself as. With the advent of the ownership of our personal brand and social media and the likes, people seek affirmation through how many followers they have, how many likes, how many retweets, how many comments. It's a validation, it's an affirmation to myself. It completes something in me that I'm looking for. You think about technology today. What a blessing in many ways. Do you realize how many things are custom tailored to me? There are so many things in our digital age where I leave cookies or digital footprints behind me everywhere I go. Every page I click on, every link that I hover over, every item that I click on or add to my cart to consider for purchase, I leave this trail of breadcrumbs digitally behind me. And you'll notice that whether it's on your phone or your shopping platform or app, that it'll make custom recommendations tailored just for you. People are used to having their personal algorithms that calculate based on what I know by now that you like, based on what I know your interests are, here's something customized just for you. Just for your interest, for your taste, for your likes, in your playlist, in your feed, in the recommendations that are made to you, in the products that are suggested for you to purchase, in your preferences. All these things are custom tailored for me and what I like and what my interests are. That's convenient in a lot of ways. But I want us to realize something a little more subtle beneath it. That I become accustomed to wanting and getting everything just the way I want it. Delivered to me just the way I like to have it. It doesn't really work too well in what I'll call real life. In our interactions and our relationships, and in our dealings with God Himself. It can be somewhat of a come down to realize that it's not all about me. When everything is so customized just for me. And then along comes somebody, how dare they? And they don't meet exactly the way I like things given to me, or I like things said to me, or just the thing I'm interested in, or what exactly I want to do. How dare you? This life is about, as the world tells us, what I deserve, what I've earned, what I'm worthy of. Follow your heart. Do what you want. Don't let people deprive you of your satisfaction. How many graduation commencement speeches are given along about May every year of somebody getting up and pumping up the young audience by saying things like, You can do whatever you want to do. You can be whatever you want to be. You set your heart on whatever you want to be, and you can achieve whatever you want to achieve. It kind of makes me think of a passage found in Luke chapter 12. The 12th chapter of Luke, beginning in the 13th verse. One of the company said unto him, Master, speak to my brother that he divide the inheritance with me. And he said unto him, Man, who made me a judge or a divider over you? And he said unto them, Take heed and beware of covetousness. For a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. He spake a parable unto them, saying, The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself. Now I'm going to ask you for a moment to count silently every reference over these next couple verses to I, me, self. All right? He thought within himself, What shall I do, because I have no room where to bestow my fruits? And he said, This will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, Thou fool, this night shall thy soul be required of thee. Then whose shall those things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. There's a lot that could be said about this parable and about this man. But this man's focus was on who? It's on myself. It's on me. It's what I've been able to do, what I'm interested in, what I want, what I'm going to provide for myself. And it can be a trap that any one of us, if we're not careful, can begin to get sucked into, that my life begins to revolve around, that I am the very center of everything in my orbit of what I want, what my interests are, and the things that I'm going to do. This man took no thought about, Lord, what would you have me to do? Lord, what is your will? What is your desire for me? Lord, thank you that your hand is the one that has provided all of these things in my life. Never once looking up and giving honor and credit unto the Lord, but instead looking in the mirror and saying, almost like Nebuchadnezzar, look at all this mighty work that I have done right here. And I'm going to keep on doing it, and I'm going to do greater and greater. Oh, I believe we should encourage our young people. But our strength and our hopes and our futures can be made bright through Jesus Christ, in whom and by whom we can do all things. It's not about following my heart and my passions and my desires and my talents and all of that. It's about what the Lord has given me, done for me, and wants from me, and what I can do with those things to be a blessing and a help to other people. Romans, the 12th chapter. Romans 12 and the third verse. For I say, through the grace given unto me, to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, according as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith. That we not think of ourselves more highly than we ought to think. It could also suggest to us that we are not to think of ourselves more often than we ought to think. I've heard it said before, and I hope it doesn't come across as trite. And many times when we're wondering and worrying about what other people are thinking about us, chances are they're not even thinking about us. But I can spend so much of my focus and my worry wondering what other people are thinking about me and what they're thinking about this and how this came across to them. And I can become, as Satan would have it, if he could, to become consumed with the man in the mirror. Don't think of yourselves more highly than you ought to think. You know there's a way that we ought to think about ourselves. And you know that way is not to just run ourselves down. It's not to just, you know what, I'm just not worth anything. I'm not worth the dirt on the bottom of somebody's shoe. I want you to think about something. That kind of attitude many times has self in it just as much as the person that says, look at me, I'm pretty great stuff, aren't I? There's still, at the core of it all, a focus on self. The Lord would have us to lose ourselves and to find it, Lord, in Thee. Writer of the Proverbs said, if you find a man that's wise in his own conceit, there's more hope of a fool than for him. Many men, leave another says, will proclaim everyone his own goodness. But a faithful man, who can find? There's a way that looks right into a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. Every way of a man is right in his own eyes. It's so easy for me to see my own self in a positive light. I know exactly why I think that, why I deserve that. I had that coming to me, good things coming to me. Remember the times that the disciples were arguing among themselves? About what? About who can be the greatest. And wasn't Brother John saying, you know, I really think, brethren, that Brother Thomas ought to be the greatest? That wasn't the basis of the argument. Now, it doesn't elaborate on all the dialogue that happened between them. But if you can just imagine how a discussion or an argument like that would go. Whenever my position that I'm defending and that I'm arguing for is that I'm the one that ought to be the greatest. I'm the one that ought to be honored above all the rest of you fellas. And here are my reasons why. The enemy will be sure to supply to our minds all kinds of reasons why my way is good and better. My opinion is to be preferred. My tastes are to be elevated above yours. May the Lord help us that we not think of self more than I ought to think. There's a scripture that says, only by pride cometh contention. There's a whole lot of pride in self. And when we follow the ways and the paths of the flesh, of carnality, it'll bring contention. You ever have poison ivy? We were talking about it. Poison ivy yesterday. You know what poison ivy makes you want to do? Scratch with everything you got. Does it really help? Not really. It can make it worse. You know what the flesh is like? Self, the flesh. It's much the same way. It wants to be gratified. It wants to be served. You know, there can be something that feels good about. Now, hear me and consider. When we're in traffic and we see someone flying past us, swerve over in front of us, down the road we see him pulled over, do we say a prayer for him, Lord, bless him? Or is there something that says, for maybe more than just the pure desire, oh, I don't want them to be a danger to society.
You had that coming to you, didn't you?
Or whenever someone does that to me and on up the road a little bit, suddenly they find themselves in a place where they really need to be able to merge back in. And here comes the itch. Ease on up a little bit closer to the person in front of you. Yep, he thought he'd do this back there. Look, we're just not going to. There can be something in that that feels, that felt good. That felt gratifying. Whenever there's arguments between people. You know, there can be something like that itch in getting the last word in. Well, I'm going to lay out, this is a good one right here. Boy, this is a zinger. Yeah, but, and I just lay it on him. That sounds pretty carnal, doesn't it? This kind of thing ought not ever to be mentioned or thought of among the saints of God. They tell us we ought to watch out and be careful. Because self can come in very subtle undertones. And there have been times that I have been in spiritual discussions and dealing with matters of truth and right and wrong and matters of the church that need to be dealt with. I'm just going to open up with you a little bit. There have been times that I spoke at times when I thought, this needs to be said. This is so evident and it is so clear here. Everybody ought to be able to see this. And I'm just going to lay it out in front of you the way that it is. But I've had the Lord come along and begin talking to me. Clint, you said that. Maybe it was truth. But you said that out of a desire to gratify something of self. You wanted to get the last word in. You just had to get your point in right there. You just couldn't let it rest and let it ride. I want to turn to the scripture that I believe is a real challenge. And I don't know if I even wrote it down. Yep, I did. 1 Corinthians, the 6th chapter. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, the 6th verse. But brother goeth to law with brother, and that before the unbelievers. Now therefore there is utterly a fault among you, because ye go to law one with another. Why do you not rather take wrong? Why do you not rather suffer yourselves to be defrauded? Nay, ye do wrong and defraud, and that your brethren. Paul's saying here, this is a shame. This ought not to be so. There are little quarrels and squabbles among you who profess to be believers, and you can't even come and humble yourselves one to another and say, brother, as Abram did to Lot, you take the better land. You take your choice and I'll take what's left. But instead, there's something within you, as Paul said to the Corinthians, ye are yet carnal. And because of that, there's striving and there's war. Spiritual warfare and all of this that's happening, it ought not to be named among you. Why do you not rather? Let me show you a better way, brethren. And I'm going to tell you, this better way is not a better way to the flesh. It's not what to man's wisdom would look like a better way. What do you mean voluntarily allow yourself to be defrauded? To be defamed? To be spoken evil of? What do you mean that I should just take that? But I believe he's saying, is there not a higher cause? Is there not a cause that's greater than Clint's cause? My purposes and my name. You know, the Lord knows how to defend our name. And we can get into some very difficult places where things maybe are being said about us, and I say, I know that's not right. I know that's not true. I know that's not what I had in my mind. We can be very quick to assign the purpose and cause and intent behind somebody's actions. And I say, Lord, help us to be careful that I not try to say, you did that and I know why you did that. I know why you said that. I know what was in your heart that was driving that. Lord, help us to be careful with that.
It doesn't feel very good when we're on the receiving end of that. And I look at that and say, I know that's not why I did that. I know that's not why I said, that's not what I had in my heart at all. And if we're not careful, there's an occasion, there's an opportunity that presents itself to me. Well, prove yourself. You can really lay out and prove to them that they are in the spiritually inferior position here. There's so much that could be said about them. You know, you could point out to them that, well, you're doing the very same thing you're accusing me of. Well, you're doing this and you're doing that. And folks, it's like fuel on a fire. That it just inflames more and more and more. And we have what we see in the world today, that nature is just set on fire by the very pits of hell. Among people and in families and in churches and across this nation. Where is the man or the woman that's willing to say, I want to be like Christ. I want to be willing to follow His example. I want to say, Lord, as You did, I'm willing to suffer evil. I'm willing to be defamed and defrauded for the cause of Christ. That I'm willing by the grace of God to say, I'll close my mouth. I'm not going to say what kind of wanted to rise up in me and say, let him have that. You tell him that because that's the truth. And yet really, it's to try to make me look better, feel better. Am I willing to say, Lord, if I can help their soul, I'll be quiet. Lord, if in the end it can serve for the purpose of their restoration, Lord, if there is this thing that I'm so concerned about, then Lord, my desire and prayer should not be, Lord, make me look good in this. Lord, have mercy on my brother's soul. Lord, have mercy on them. This could send them down a path that would put them in trouble with You. Lord, I'm willing to be sacrificed. I'm willing to be defrauded and my name cast out as evil. If by my using wisdom requires me to just be quiet, to just let Him run over me, Lord, I'm willing for the cause in the name of Christ. James talked about in the third chapter. We can turn and read James chapter 3. Oh, I don't know how relevant you feel like any of this is to you. But I'm going to tell you it is to me. And I believe as long as we're in a world where the Lord has us dealing with other people, we're going to need wisdom from above. James, the third chapter, beginning in the 13th verse. Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. You know, wisdom is often not the loudest voice in the room. You remember how wisdom was personified in the Proverbs? Yea, wisdom crieth out in the chief concourses, and it didn't seem to me in the way that that's presented that it's on the bullhorn, blasting out, making sure I'm the loudest volume and in your face. But it's more like a still, small, quiet voice of one calling out to anyone that'll listen. As the mad throng rushes by in their own wisdom and knowledge, and I've got this figured out, there's a little voice that calls out. There's a better way. There's a way to put out the fires that are raging in your family. There's a way to quench the fires that's burning between you and your neighbor and your coworker. There's a better way. The voice of wisdom calls out, will you take the better way? Or will you insist on following the way that's natural to man that'll lead to more and more strife? Wisdom cries out, who's a wise man? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with the meekness of wisdom. But if ye have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. There is a wisdom that comes not from above. There is a wisdom that comes from the very pits of hell. And if you look at it on its face, it would appear to be wisdom. It would appear to be a prudent way to run my affairs in life. And I want to try to give you some examples of maybe some of the advice or the ways of the world tries to deal with problems in life. Don't let anyone dim your light. And I want us to notice, as I just kind of rehearse some of the, maybe you've heard some of these verbatim or something very similar to this. And I want you to notice many of these things that I'm about to mention to you on the surface could sound very plausible, could sound even good, could sound virtuous. Don't let anybody dim your light. Well, we're not supposed to have a dim light. But there's something else that's an undercurrent behind that. You don't let anybody put you down. Don't let anybody try to dim the expression of yourself. Don't let anybody get between you and your voice, your self-expression. Seek good vibes only. Only good vibes in your life. If somebody doesn't bring good vibes your way, you don't need them. Don't waste your energy on people who don't appreciate you. Can you imagine seeing a meme or something like that on social media? Don't waste your time on people who don't appreciate you. And you know, there's something about that that rings on first blush. Yeah, that's right. They don't appreciate me. They're a waste of time, me dealing with them, if they're not going to appreciate who I am. But you better mark carefully. Where does this wisdom come from? Well, you match their energy. If they come at you, you come right back at them. If they dish it out to you, you dish it right back to them. And if, through honest hearts and a wisdom that comes from above, we recognize there's something there that's in conflict with the teachings of Christ, then I got to say, Lord, I choose your way. They don't deserve you. Don't set yourself on fire to keep someone else warm. Well, sure. In other words, don't destroy yourself just for somebody else's benefit. I don't believe the Lord teaches us that we cast our pearls before swine, or that we walk unwisely before the children of this world. Pearls before swine. I want to mention this too. Talk about an itch. I remember in high school talking with a boy who proclaimed himself to be an atheist. We sat next to each other in class. We'd get into these conversations. And I'm going to tell you, he could be pretty abrupt, pretty brash. He could say some things that were pretty hurtful. And I was trying to think what to say to him one day. And I said, you know what? I said his name. I'm not going to say anything else. Why not? Because the Bible says not to cast my pearls before swine. You think that won him? Not at all. It lit a fire. What are you calling me? Folks, there's wisdom to apply. Something might be the truth, but I don't need to say it. There are some things that are truth that are for my understanding, that I walk more wisely towards them than are without. The Lord, help us to have wisdom. That comes not the kind of wisdom that leads to strife and turmoil and all of that. Don't set yourself on fire to warm someone else. And yet I see by the very life of Christ, a life of sacrifice, a life of dying out to his own pleasures and wants and desires, and the very life itself to save others. You do you. Hey, you just do you. You be who you want to be. Wisdom that is from below. Again, sometimes in subtle undercurrents, but may the Lord give us understanding and wisdom. There is a philosophy of this world that is very detrimental to the child of God. Colossians, the second chapter in the 8th verse, says, "Beware, lest any man spoil you through philosophy and vain deceit, after the tradition of men, after the rudiments of the world, and not after Christ." There are philosophies of men that are after the tradition of men and in the ways of man that we need to avoid. When we go back here to James 3, I want to finish this up. This wisdom descends not from above, but it's earthly, sensual, devilish. You look at what Scripture says, wisdom is justified of her children. In other words, I believe it's saying that you look at the fruit of a thing, and it'll give evidence to the wisdom of the parent. You take that way of life, and you see what the fruits of it are. There's a way of wisdom that comes from the world and how to raise our children. And you look at the children of this world and see what it testifies of. There's a way of that this world says, many of which have quoted to you, that the world says this is the way to deal with people. Negative people in your life, you don't need it. Cut them off. It had nothing to do with them. But you look at the fruit of that. You look at what that yields and results in people's lives. Are they more at peace with one another? Is there a greater contentment and satisfaction and peace and joy in the Lord? No. You look at what this world has turned into. We don't need the wisdom of this world. We need a wisdom that is from above, that is first pure and then peaceable, gentle and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. Doesn't that sound like a more beautiful picture? Lord, I want that way. I want to follow the wisdom that comes from above, not that which comes from beneath. But I'm going to have to be willing to lose myself and find it, Lord, in Thee. Selfishness can be easy to spot in other people. Hard to spot in myself. There are lots of forms of self trying to take over. Self-pity is one that the enemy loves to leverage. When I start to feel sorry for, not my brother, not my sister, but myself, it's a spiral that the enemy wants to get us on that yields fruit that is not like what James testified here at the end that we just read. Self-preservation. Look out for number one because nobody else is going to. That's the world's mindset, the world's mentality. We're called rather to die out to ourselves. Self-consciousness. I already touched on this a little bit. Being self-conscious, you know that can be rooted in pride. Where it's always coming to my mind, how do I look to others? What do they think about me? To not be so focused on myself or so conscious of self and everything. You ever, you don't have to show me your hands. You ever seen a group photo that you're in? I want you to just think to yourself, who's the first person I see in the photo? Envy. Why don't I have that? Why haven't I received this? Jealousy. Why are they getting that? Resentment. After all I've done for them, this is the treatment that I get. Impatience. This is interrupting my plans for the day. How many times do you think Jesus' plans were interrupted? And yet, oh, you'd see him trying to sneak away off into the mountain alone to just have some time alone with the Lord. And here comes all the noisy crowd coming after him. Did he lash out at him? He looked on him with compassion, saying, "This is the very reason that I've come. This is my plan. This is what I'm here for." And yet how easy it can be for me to get bent out of shape whenever my plans get turned upside down because of somebody else or some other circumstance or situation. This is my plan. This is my day. This is what I need to do. Maybe I need to have a mindset shift. Lord, I'm yours. And this is your day. And Lord, these plans I give to you. Do with them what you want. There is a self-humility. Voluntary humility. No, you go right ahead. I'm not even good enough. I'm not even able. And there can be, wrapped up in that, there can be self as well. Perfectionism. Say, no, wait a minute. I just want to do things right. I want to make sure everything is done just right. You know, there can, I'm not saying always this is the case, but there can be wrapped in that some pride and self. This is the way I want to be seen. This is the way I want to be portrayed, the image that I want to convey. Selfishness. Ask, how does this affect me? But love converts that to how does this affect other people? 1 Corinthians, the 13th chapter, as we try to conclude here. 1 Corinthians 13. The fourth verse, charity suffers long and is kind. Charity envieth not, charity vaunteth not itself. Is not puffed up, doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil. Whenever love, selfishness begins to be replaced by the love of God shed abroad in my heart, it begins to not seek my own. What's in this for me? What can I get out of this? Okay, I will. Jesus even talked about when you're inviting people over for dinner, don't just invite those that you're going to get something out of it for yourself in return. Don't just be thinking about you and what's in it for you. But as Paul said, I would most gladly therefore spend and be spent for you. Love seeketh not her own. Well, maybe that's enough for us this morning. May the Lord challenge, encourage our hearts. There is a way that's holy. There is a way that's pure, that's right, a way that is above, a way that leads to peace and righteousness and gentleness. But it's not going to be achieved by the wisdom of this world. Look not to the memes of social media, but to the pages of Holy Scripture for your inspiration and your guidance in how to handle people and situations, because this wisdom that comes from above makes no sense to the carnal mind. But what about me? But what am I going to get out of this? The Lord's not worried about that. When we lose ourselves, as He said, whosoever seeks to save his life is going to lose it. But they that are willing to lose their lives, that's when you truly find it. Whenever we're not living for self, as all the rest of the world is, but I'm living for the Lord. And by that, I'm living for others and how I can be a blessing to the Lord and to others. I'll truly find my life then. You pray for me. Amen.